Radio Beograd 1. Ne, slušaj.
Pop karusel.
Pop kultura u pop karuselu. Radnim danima od 18 do 19.
Pop karusel. Katarina Epstein.
Mark Lorenz, u domenu pop kulture poznatiji kao Mala, jedan je od najznačajnijih londonskih producenata. Pionir dubstepa i jedan od osnivača etikete Digital Mystics, razgovarao je sa nama u Puli gde je nastupao na festivalima Outlook i Dimensions. U okviru DMZ-a, kao DJ i pre svega koncertantno promovisao svoj album Mala in Cuba, koji je snimao u Havani sa Giles Petersonom.
Music from the start, I know that, but I never see your life.
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage, you know, on, I don't know, electronic festival to play emotionally?
I guess for me there's no separation between music and emotion. When I create music or when I listen to music, I think generally the music that I feel the most or I enjoy listening to is something that moves me emotionally. I think where I've had a history in electronic music, I guess over the past decade I've built myself some sort of platform to be able to present music to people in any way that I feel fit, which is a very lucky situation to be in. I feel it's also a situation which I take great responsibility in actually trying to present something new and different to people rather than just the same or just conforming into apparently what you should play at a festival or something like this, you know. So for me, it's it was a perfect opportunity to present the album to people in a live capacity. I can't be any other way. I can't do music any other way than this way.
It was very interesting. You have two percussionists, drummer and percussionist live instruments on the stage, and it is a new experience for you.
Yes.
With this album.
Yes.
Do you like? I thought you like it a lot.
I do.
Because you came and kissed your drummers.
I do. We met both Ollie and Satin. Ollie plays the conga and the bongo, and Satin plays the timbale. We met once before our first show. We had one rehearsal, and they're very experienced musicians, both trained in Cuban rhythms. Been playing together for 20 years. You know, if you read their list of bands and musicians and artists that they've played with many, many great artists over the years. So I was very lucky that they would even consider to work with me. So how I like to do things, and I guess how I like to, even the way that I like to run a record label or the way I like to structure an event when I put on an event, is that you have to somehow allow them to feel like it's theirs as well. So it wasn't about me hiring musicians and saying, right, this is what I want you to play, play it exactly like that. For me, that wouldn't feel right. So it was about showing them what I had done and listening to how they felt that they could interpret the music which should be played on the album in the live way. So in that one day of rehearsal, that's what we did. You know, they created some rhythms which they thought they would, you know, listening to what I'd done on the record, but recreating it in their way. And it just worked, you know, like just on and off stage, we get on so well together, really. All of the group of people, you know, my tour manager and my sound engineer, Toby, you know, as I say, Ollie and Satin, and Swindle, who plays the keys, yeah, who records on my record label. And Holly has joined us kind of like after about half of year. It was evident that some festivals really wanted a vocalist. And yeah, so we brought Holly in, and just all of us get on like we've known each other for years and years and years. So for us, it's just a really nice opportunity to experience something together. And for me, being on the roads for so long, just as a DJ, just playing music by myself to an audience, it's actually very nice to work with a group of people and have that interaction on the stage and also share that experience. So when you come off the stage, you can go, oh, you know, yeah, they're, you know, you can share it. Because, you know, I try and go home and I try and explain and say to my mother or to my dad what it is that I do. Or I try and explain. Some people ask me, how does it feel to do this? It's almost impossible to explain, because it's not just going to do a thing. It's a whole lifestyle. This is how I live my life, you know.
dubstep is a great movement, okay? After the jungle, the first movement who came from London here. What missed dubstep to be mainstream is a singer, they said.
Yeah. See, I'm not too concerned with what's popular or what's mainstream. I don't really listen to much of the radio or stuff like that, so maybe I'm not the best to comment on. But, you know, I think not so much a singer makes something mainstream. For me, it's more frequency. You know, like if you listen to, you know, I don't want to name any names or anything. It's maybe unfair, but some music just sounds better on the radio.
Yeah.
Because it's designed for a mainstream audience, so it's programmed and arranged in a way that fulfills a certain criteria. But, you know, from where I come from, people didn't do that. You know, as I say, I'm a junglist. What people like Goldie and Groove Rider and Fabio and Ray Keith and Doc Scott and Randall and Jumpin' Jack Frost and Nicky Black Market and Kenny Ken, Nicky Finn, all these jungle DJs, what they were doing back then, that wasn't conforming to anything. And this is really where my education started, I think, in music. Even though I was listening to music growing up, when I heard jungle music on the pirate radio station when I was like 12 years old, I was like this. I felt it, but I couldn't understand what was happening to me. And in a way, that's kind of something that stayed with me for forever, because even with the music that I make, for example, I don't necessarily understand how I've created it, because you're just part of the process. I'm not analysing the process, I'm just doing it. But I'm happy with that. I'm happy not understanding. To not understand something doesn't mean that you don't feel it. And for me, this is what I do when I write music. I navigate based upon what I feel, not what I think.
did amazing things with the rhythm. Nobody did like you before. So you started that new movement, music.
I don't know.
How do you start, for example? Sorry.
What do you mean? Are you talking about 10 years ago doing
for
dubstep?
Example, yeah.
Or, I don't know. Again, it's one of those things you Well, at that time, it was very different because everything was accelerating, you know, everything was getting faster. You know, house music had been around for a long time already, you know. You know, jungle had its thing, and it had also seen what we see now with dubstep. You see it go mainstream, and certain artists become very, very wealthy and very rich and very popular in the commercial sense. We felt that there was like, I say we because there was a handful of people that were doing this all at the same time. And it wasn't so much like we felt there was a gap, but just maybe because of our society and because of like our surroundings musically. For me, it felt natural to like take off the gas, so to speak, because everything seemed like it was going faster. But we reversed that. So instead of like having big build-ups and big drops, it was just very minimal, almost no drop at all. It'd be a very abstract, say like 16-bar intro of just like a hi-hat and a pad, and then it would have a like 4 bars of silence, and then the heavy bass line would kick in, and the beat would be very slow and rugged, and you know. I don't know how it was created, and I don't know how the movement took on. All I can say is that I guess it was at the right time, the right place with the right sound, because of the frequency I guess we were pushing out there, and because there was a unit of people doing it, not just one or two people, but there was a handful of people. That community just became strong, and it was very self-sufficient. We didn't care about that scene or that scene or that scene or what that magazine said or what that journalist said. It wasn't interested because nobody was interested in what we was doing. We was doing stuff in very small underground places where nobody really knew. But we always had good sound systems, and we always cared very much about the music. I truly think that back then that this movement and this music was built almost purely on sound. No fashion, no media or journal, you know, media hype. It was based on producers wanting to make good music that sounded good and powerful in sound systems, and that's what we did. You know, Scream, Benga, Code 9, Plastician, Chef, N-Type, Hatcher, Youngstar, you know, Lofa, Cokie, this is what we did. We didn't, you know, nothing else was relevant.
You're together all your life.
Some of these guys.
Yeah.
These
are nice.
So, you know. But that changes over time because it becomes fashionable. And then it becomes, you know, people with a lot of money get involved and they dangle carrots and, you know, they offer people this and offer people that. And maybe their intention isn't necessarily just music, but it's also making money and having this and having that. So it can change, you know. But I do think the reason why this particular music became as global as it did is because we focused on sound.
Tell me about your process. Oh. How do you start? You take a sample. Explain to our audience.
Like, for example, when I was in the studio last night with no idea, turned on my computer, and then I just thought about a drum sound. So I just got the hi-hats. So I just made a very basic hi-hat pattern. And then what happens is, to me in the studio, music kind of writes itself. You take one sound, and that sound then says to you, you need this sound. So what I do is I listen to the music and listen to what the music says to me. So then I take another sound, and them two sounds are communicating now. So what you have to do is you have to make these two sounds have a relationship that works. Sometimes you can have like disharmony, which kind of creates a kind of a tension or an effect that you're going for. But for me, for the first, I don't know, for the main elements, they need to be harmonic. They need to have harmony with each other. So once those two sounds are communicating, then those two sounds will talk to you and they tell me, right, you need this sound now. So then I search for this sound, and sometimes it's almost like colours or shapes that you see out of thin air. So it's just like, boom, you pick it and then you put it in place, and then you've got three people, you've three relationships to think about, and then you work with those, and boom, you know, it just keeps coming, keeps coming, keeps coming. And then I get to a point of where I have perhaps like a beat and a bass line and a slight, I have like the key of the song, and maybe I have a kind of a melody, and maybe I have it in that 32 bar loop, sometimes smaller, sometimes a 16 bar or 8 bar loop. And then from that, when I usually get that much down, which can be anything from 15 minutes to 1 hour, you know, where you can really have the main bulk of your track is like boom, there, quick. And then I find it very difficult to start going forward if it doesn't sound right. So I start kind of slightly mixing as I'm going along. So when I mean that, I mean I'll start EQing, start doing small bits of processing, you know, maybe some compression and maybe some filtering, whatever's needed. Again, it's not, there's never a set way of working. Even two hi-hats are different, so you have to listen to them differently because they talk to you differently. So yeah, so you just have to listen to the music. It's as simple as that. But you know, it takes time. You know, when a lot of my friends were going out at the weekend and playing, and I would at the weekend I'd stay at home and be in the studio. I'd go to work in the morning, I'd get home in the evening, I'd eat food, and then I'd make tunes all night. I'd make music all night, and then I'd go to sleep 4 or 5 o'clock, wake up at 8 o'clock, go to work, and that was my cycle for years. You know, from when I was about 17, 18 years old, when I started kind of like mucking around on computers writing music. And it wasn't until I was about 21, 22 when I started making music, taking it really seriously, like the production side of it. And then 23 is when me and Koki released the first Digital Mystics record on Big Apple Records. So you know, there were some years where nobody didn't hear what we was doing, but we was in the studio every day, as much as I am now, probably more than I am now, you get what I'm saying? So it's just like life though, isn't it? You have to commit, and part of committing to something means you have to sacrifice something somewhere else. And that's, you know, this is the choice that I made.
How did you meet Giles?
Giles was coming to DMZ parties that we used to throw in London, and we didn't even know. I got asked to play, do some interviews with Giles and his radio stations over the years. And I guess we just had a mutual respect, because there was compilations and records that I heard through listening to Giles. And again, I'm not a big radio listener. I never have been, apart from pirate radio stations. So I heard Giles more through compilations than actually through his radio, you know. But so I guess we just had a mutual respect for what we were doing. I don't know what it is that he heard, because it was really a random telephone call when he called me and said, do you want to come to Cuba and make this record? But he was so genuine with his offer, and it was, it felt so right the way that he approached me. It was one of those situations where I couldn't turn down. I had absolutely no idea what I was getting myself into, but I felt comfortable with Giles, you know. So, you know, I said yeah, you know, and I told him I knew nothing about Cuba and nothing about Cuban music. He said, don't worry about it, just come. Your dad's from Jamaica, Cuba's 90 kilometers from Jamaica. I reckon your sound and your use of rhythms will work perfectly with Cuban music. So I was like, he heard something or thought something. Yeah. He was the one that connected the dots, not me. So he took me out there, and you know, it was really nice actually, because obviously we'd known each other for a few years beforehand, just in passing. But you know, getting to spend real proper time with him and getting to have deep conversations with him about his past and how he has grown in the music industry and all the achievements and all the people that he's worked with. So getting to exchange those conversations at breakfast, at lunch, at dinner, on the plane and all stuff like that, you know, it was a, I'm really grateful for the experience. I find him to be a very decent man. The front of it all, he loves music. He really, really, like, he loves music. And for those people that know Giles, maybe they can relate to me when I say this, but when it comes to music, he's like a child. He has this, like, he has this very youthful energy. You know, he's been in the game for how many years, you know? But his passion and his love and his drive finding new music, for playing music, is just like that of an 18-year-old. And that's why he still plays out shows week in, week out. That's why he can still do his radio show week in, week out, because he loves it. This is who he is, and this is what I was saying earlier. It's not that we try to do something. This is who you are. This is your life. Yeah. This is your lifestyle. This is how it's supposed to be. And I say I'm very grateful I met Giles, and working with his label, Brownswood. All the team at Brownswood are just an absolute joy to work with, just a great team of people who were so supportive and were so into the record. It just made the whole working experience for me very comfortable, because you must remember, for years I only put out music on my own label. I don't mess with no one of a label. Many people over the years ask me to write records for their labels, or major record label ask me to do this or do that, and I'll be like, no, it doesn't feel right. But something with Giles, boom, let's go for it.
Yo muevo mis recuerdos, viajo con la mente, salgo del encierro, analizo donde piso, calculo los movimientos y a veces do re mi fa sol. La noche se despierta el sol, hasta de manera normal tu control. Tiene la llave maestra para sobornar y a veces te dejo una desilusión.
Thank you.
Because I've been playing at a lot of different type of festivals.
Yeah.
Places like North Sea Jazz Festival or like WOMAD Festival. These festivals that predominantly are like musicians and bands, not necessarily like electronic stuff so much, you know. So we played at Southport Weekender. I don't think any my type of music has ever been at Southport Weekender. But because this fusion with sound, people for some reason are open to at least having a listen to it, you know. That's what's been really nice for me this year, you know, after playing music and making music for 10 years, to present music to people in a totally new way. You know, I work with musicians, I'm working with a mixing desk with analog effects, and playing at all these festivals where I'm amongst, you know, bands and, you know, world-class musicians. And I consider myself not at that level at all, you know. I'm not a musician.
You're so better than anyone. But I'm not
a musician in that way, in a classical or a contemporary in a traditional sense, you know. As I say, if you ask me to play, or if you ask me to hum the note C, I probably would get it wrong. But if you play the note C to me, I feel
you
it.
Will know.
So you understand. I maybe approach music is perhaps slightly different to how a classically trained musician would be.
So you went to Cuba together, mm-hmm. and you take a sample with the live musicians.
Yeah, Roberto Fonseca.
Is it new for you?
No, Roberto Fonseca had linked up with Giles beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody that doesn't know Roberto Fonseca, you should check him out. He's an incredible pianist, incredible musician, has released a few albums himself, travels all over the world, has played with Buena Vista Social Club. So it was Roberto and his band and Giles. In the morning before we were going to go to the studio, we still had no idea what we was going to do. And they come up with a concept, why don't we just record traditional Cuban rhythms for Mala so we can listen to them and start understanding the Cuban rhythms. So it was almost like being at school, going on a school trip and having some education about Cuban rhythms. So I took maybe 50 gig of them playing for me back home. But as soon as I got home, I was like, started twisting it around and seeing what was going on. And that initial recording, which was really just to be something educational, ended up becoming the blueprint of my understanding of and where I would, I guess, how I would approach making my Cuban album. And what's interesting, actually, after making the album, listening to the musicians that play on my live show, listening how they listen to the album, because they're like, they know the rhythm, but okay, so say we're doing 4-4, 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4. They're listening to the rhythms that I've created, and they're like, but you've started on 3. Yeah? So they're having to play starting on 3. So even the traditional rhythm, say like you've got like merengue is a rhythm. So I say I starting on, instead of starting on the 1, I'm starting on the 3. So the musicians are having to play on the 3. So it's just, you know, that's the beautiful thing about sound, right? Yeah. You know, you, and that's the nice thing actually about approaching something like a child, not knowing anything, is because you don't mind tearing up the rule book, because there is no rules, you know, there's just sound. You know when you look at those optical illusions on the wall, and you, at the first you can't see anything, it's all a blur. Then all of a sudden your eyes focus, and then you see an image, and then you can always see the image again. For me, that's how this process was, because it was a very uncomfortable process for me, the whole album. Because, I was working with such high level of musicians, and I felt so inferior. When I take all this information back to the studio with me, I'm thinking, I need to make something that respects them, that respects Giles, and also pleases them and pleases Giles, and all these things that I don't actually care about, but because I've been asked, and I've been asked in a way that is very genuine and decent, of course I have to care about it now. It was a painful experience, but it's that thing of like, when you come out of it the other side, you grow, you learn. Part of that suffering is healing. I'm always going to be who I am in the studio. I love being in the studio on my own, making these sub-heavy music for dubplate and sound system. But now there's this huge part of me that is open to a whole different way of thinking, not just creating music, but actually the way that I want to present music to people. So yeah, it's without trying to sound cliche, it totally changed my life.
Emisiju su realizovali Andreja Andrejić i Katarina Epštejn. Prijetno.